to smoke about this time of the day. And all this is keeping me to where I can't go do it. Now, I'm gonna go do it.
Well, hello, and welcome back to another session of About This Time of Day, a Teen Mom podcast. My name is V, I am your host, and I am back after a short hiatus. Sorry to leave you guys hanging, but I'm so happy to be back and ready to get into Teen Mom 2. I've read the description for this episode, and I don't know why I put it off. This session's companion strain is a little something called Man of Steel. I have a connection where I kind of just text an order and it gets sent to me, so I don't really know what I'm getting into before then. I just know the price range. This was on the higher tier price, and it certainly delivers. Holy fucking shit. I can't smoke a blunt of this at one time, and I have a hugely high tolerance. That should be telling you something. So find your household equivalent of whatever this strain is and join in the fun. Now, back to the reason why we're all here. This session, we're going to discuss episode 3 of Teen Mom 2, Change of Heart. The episode description reads, over 4th of July, Joe's parents tell Kaylin to buckle down or move out, while Janelle signs over custody of Jace to her mom. Leah and Corey give it another shot, and Chelsea tells Megan she's going to try to work it out with Adam. Oh, goody. We start this episode on Chelsea. When we open on Chelsea, her voiceover tells us once again how wonderful it is living with your best friend and baby when someone's paying for everything. We see Chelsea in the kitchen with her father holding baby Aubrey, and Chelsea's cleaning up, working around the kitchen, and her dad is just watching her. After they banter back and forth for a few seconds, Chelsea mentions that she's only been eating ramen noodles lately. Her dad says, yep, that's the meal of people who move out, and then promptly offers her money for groceries. I can't be sure how much he gave her, but he does say it only left him with $3 in his wallet. Could have been exaggerating. Either way, I'm sure there's plenty more where that came from, so I can't feel that bad for him. But I can feel extremely jealous of Chelsea, especially given the climate of our current situation in the United States of America. And probably all over the world. I don't want to sound ignorant. I know we have international listeners. Hi guys, thanks so much for listening. Chelsea's voiceover tells us that she's so glad to have her dad's support, she can't possibly ever let him know that she's talking to Adam again. And sure as shit, we see his car pull up. As the scene continues, we see Chelsea, Aubrey, and Adam in Chelsea's living room talking, and it looks like they're trying to teach Aubrey to crawl. This prompts Chelsea to ask Adam at some point, is it weird teaching her to crawl with me because you've already missed a lot of her firsts? Do you like it? I guess meaning, do you like teaching a baby to crawl? And I think it takes a very special person, and by special person I mean attentive parent, to like teaching a baby to crawl. Just kidding. I'm sure if I had a child, I would love to teach him or her to crawl. Yeah, it would be very rewarding. But of course, we see Adam give a very half-hearted, yeah. The scene is edited to appear as if Adam didn't say very much more than that at all, and quickly shifts to Chelsea trying to teach baby Aubrey to say mama. Not sure what prompted this or why, but I guess maybe talking about firsts, she wanted to speed along the process. I truly believe this scene is heavily edited, but I think there's also some truth to it as well. As the scene continues, we see Chelsea over and over again trying to teach baby Aubrey, mama, mama. And we see Adam to the side of Chelsea saying, dada, which is easier to say. You know what I mean? Dada, which is just kind of a tap on the top of the roof of your mouth, or mama, which is repeated motor skills with your lips going in and out to create the ma sound. And I'm sure, you know, a baby can fake it and go mama, but I'm not really here to debate that. All I'm saying is dada is probably easier to say. The entirety of the scene thereafter is Chelsea repeatedly say, no, mama, mama, and Aubrey being edited in to repeat her saying dada the one time that she did say it, possibly twice that she said it. The scene ends out with Chelsea being unable to get Aubrey to say anything but Dada, and Chelsea exclaiming in a very annoyed grunt, So I really believe that it's easier for a small child to say Dada than Mama, but I do think that it was certainly heavily edited to show it repeatedly happening to the point of frustration for Chelsea. It doesn't paint her in a bad light, but I think it's supposed to be funny. Like, look, little baby Aubrey, so fucking stupid, she doesn't know that her dad's a piece of shit. That kind of thing? No, I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. They're probably not thinking that the baby is stupid.
Oh my lord!
Stupid babies need the most attention.
But I really just see it as kind of corny and lame, and maybe it translated better in the early 2000s. Oh my gosh, no, I'm sorry, 2011. So in the early 2010s, watching it now, it just frustrates me because it's so heavily edited and I don't think it actually happened. If it did happen and they're like recreating it, I can see that. But otherwise, it just makes me irritated because it gives Adam that much more airtime than I fucking want him to have. Chelsea's next scene opens with her working on some homework and her voiceover telling everybody that she really wants to get school done by the end of summer so she can start beauty school in the fall. So it sounds like she's on track to at least do something, and that's great. Her voiceover does continue, though, and says that living in a house alone with Megan and Aubrey can be a bit distracting. And since Adam came over the other day, she can't stop thinking about him. Chelsea takes baby Aubrey, goes into one of the bedrooms, and sits down to have a little chat with Megan about her current romantic predicament.
Hi!
Hey. So, you know, when Adam came here, he texted me afterwards, and he, like, wants to get back together, I think. I don't know what to do. I mean, like, he says he's changed, but I don't know. How can someone change?
Yeah, because you can say anything.
Part of me thinks I shouldn't even, like, take Adam back or even talk to him. Then the other part of me is, like, you should go back and try it one more time.
Yeah.
Because if he changed, I think it'd be best.
I just don't get how, like, a week ago, you're like, f*** him, and now you're like, I love him.
Oh, well, wait. First, I didn't say I love him.
But you did say.
I'm thinking about it. But if he is mean or calls me something or definitely anything about her one more time, no, mm-hmm. I'm done. I just want a mom and dad for her.
Mm-hmm.
I just want it to work so bad.
It is frustrating to listen to Chelsea, but it is very difficult for me personally to get mad at her because her emotional reasoning is not rational, but very sound. She wants it to work with her baby's father. Who wouldn't want that? I, again, don't have kids, but I would imagine if I had children, I would want to be at least on good terms with their father. I'm sure it would be much more difficult if their father was such a raging asshole like we see Adam is, but Chelsea is so perhaps naive and sweet to the point where she will look past his inexcusable actions to try to give the family one more chance. Again, I can't blame her for wanting this, and Aubrey is still young enough right now to where anything Adam says or does to Chelsea really won't affect Aubrey too much, especially because Chelsea is so good at putting Aubrey first and not her own emotions. So for right now, this is harmless, but we have to be careful here because it could very easily become an abusive situation, verbal, mental, even physical. Tread lightly, Chelsea. I don't like this thought pattern and where it's going because it pretty much sounds like she's going to get back together with him. And by the look on Megan's face during this scene, she and I feel the same way about it. The scene transitions over to Adam, who is checking the oil in his friend's car. His friend is wearing a hat that says Sex Panther, and I can only assume underneath it says 60% of the time it works every time.
That doesn't make sense.
His friend casually and not prompted at all asks Adam, "So, how are you and Chelsea?" Adam says that they're trying to get back together and that Adam is trying to settle down. It sounds like, from what he's saying, he's ready to get back into this relationship and be that father figure that Aubrey so desperately needs. Adam goes on to say things like, oh, well, even when I was with other girls, I still always thought about Chelsea, songs I would hear, everything I would do, they would always be on my mind. I'm sorry, I don't fucking buy that at all, but whatever. Ultimately, he rounds out his thoughts by saying, I can't allow anyone else to step into that role of being a father to Aubrey and or boyfriend to Chelsea. That's just not right. Okay, but it's right to say things like, sign over the papers for that mistake. Okay, I know we really shouldn't be holding people to their past mistakes if they're trying to say they're changing, but this is fucking Adam, okay? We kind of know where this is going, and even if you haven't watched the series for some reason, hey, spoiler alert, he doesn't get better. It's not a Joe situation here. He doesn't get better, and it's very painful to watch. And so hearing him say shit like this is mostly just frustrating and not at all enlightening or encouraging, especially given the fact that Chelsea is very much considering going back to him and is clearly, in my mind, going to be set up for disappointment. The scene closes out with Adam proclaiming, "It's time to grow up and stop being a dumbass." Chelsea's next scene is so nauseating, I'm going to try to recap as quickly as possible. Chelsea and Adam are shown sitting on a couch with baby Aubrey in between them. It is kind of a cute scene. The three of them are cuddling, and it does look like a cute little family unit. And it does present an opportune moment for one of them, I don't remember who, and I'm not going back to watch it, to say, so, do you want to try again? And essentially, they decide here that they're going to try dating again, and Adam is going to shape up and fly right. Well, let's certainly hope so. Even in this brief scene, there is still some tense things that come out when they're just trying to talk. For instance, Chelsea mentions, so you're going to stay here and not be mad when you can't go to a party? And Adam says, yep. And Chelsea says, really? Adam says, yep. And Chelsea says, well, what about tonight? And he's like, yeah, but I can't go tonight. Apparently there's a party the night that they were filming this that he wanted to go to, because Chelsea then says, well, you wanted to go. But Adam says, yes, but I can't go. I'm here with you, and I'm not going to act like a five-year-old about it. He doesn't say it in quite the way I'm saying it now, but it just shows you that even if they're trying to work it out and stay on the same page, there's enough tension in the room for this bickering to come up. I don't know. When I'm rebuilding a relationship, if I'm bickering with you right away, I'm immediately losing patience with you and rethinking my decision. There's even a strange moment where Chelsea mentions cheating, and Adam's response is puzzling.
I don't want that anymore. I don't want to worry about cheating or anything like that.
Me either.
I know, Adam.
So, did Chelsea cheat on him before? Or is it one of those things that the narcissist asshole boyfriend thinks that that other person has cheated on them, projecting perhaps their own behavior? I don't know. Again, it's not something I care enough to look up, but it's interesting. The scene ends out with the two of them deciding to give it another try. Chelsea's voiceover closes out the scene by saying that while she thinks things might work out with Adam this time, until she knows for sure, she's not telling anyone that they're dating again, especially not her dad. Chelsea's next scene starts with her voiceover telling us that it's 4th of July weekend, and before the fun starts, she has to meet with an administrator from the beauty school that she wants to attend in the fall, and Megan is going along for moral support. Where's baby Aubrey, you might ask? Well, since Chelsea and Adam are giving it another try, she's also going to give Adam another try at being a father by allowing him to watch Aubrey for the afternoon while she is at this meeting. Okay, we see Chelsea in the living room with Aubrey on her lap and Adam next to her, and I think Megan is there as well, telling Aubrey, okay, mommy's gotta go, you're gonna be home alone with daddy. And Adam legit goes, yeah, about damn time. What the fuck does that even mean? Why do you have to say anything like that right now? Can you just shut the fuck up and be a good guy for 10 seconds? No, clearly he cannot. Chelsea doesn't really even seem to hear these comments. I'm sure it's background noise to her at this point. But she does say seriously to him, "You need to watch her." Adam responds, "Yeah, where's the Xbox channel?" Which I guess means input 2 or whatever, fucking idiot. Chelsea ignores that comment as well and says you have to feed her and actually take care of her and stuff. You know, basic things you wouldn't think you'd have to tell a father, or at least someone you're putting in charge of watching your child for a few hours. I don't know. I mean, I guess you do have to tell them, hey, they haven't eaten yet, or what have you. But to be like, you have to watch her, and he just completely blowing her off, that would not make me comfortable leaving the child with you. Like, if you're not even going to pay attention to me right now, how can I trust that you're going to pay attention to this baby that I have in my lap? Fucking idiot. God, I hate this guy. Chelsea gives Aubrey one last kiss goodbye, and she's shown exiting the living room, heading into the kitchen to leave out some food and a bib for baby Aubrey. She says to the camera, or possibly Megan, because they weren't doing fourth wall yet, so she says to Megan, "Look, I'm going to leave this stuff here, and I bet it will be still here when we get back." What the fuck? Why are you leaving your baby with this guy? You don't think he's going to feed your child, but you're leaving him with her? I don't understand. Maybe she thinks, like, because MTV is there, they're not going to let anything bad happen to these kids. I don't know if any of y'all saw that Reddit AMA from that guy who did camera work on reality shows on MTV. I think it's been taken down or something, but he talks about watching somebody's kids, there's speculation that it's Leah, watching somebody's kids eat cheese puffs off the floor. That was their breakfast or something. Like, Leah or whoever the parent was just poured some cheese puffs on the floor and that's what they ate. So MTV is not really going to look after your baby, Chelsea. I would really think about taking Aubrey with you at this point. Even in the car to Megan, she says something.
"I'm, like, actually concerned. Like, he doesn't watch our gut."
If you are actually concerned, do not leave your child with that person. Period. Once Chelsea and Megan make it to Stewart's Beauty School slash salon, probably, Chelsea sits down with the director of the school, or at least one of the counselors, it doesn't really matter, and they have a discussion about what's necessary to start up classes with them in the fall. The person that Chelsea is speaking with asks her if she is able to get her high school transcripts that day. Unfortunately, Chelsea has to tell her no. She has not yet finished high school, but she is looking to complete that and have those transcripts ready in about a month. The counselor or person that she is speaking with tells her, "Okay, we're getting very close to the fall deadline, so I will have to have it exactly 1 month from today." And she emphasizes this fact quite a bit, so it sounds like she's probably dealt with this before and had people flake out on her or want an exception for one reason or another. She's very clear, she needs it in 1 month, and Chelsea agrees, "You will have it in 1 month." Chelsea's voiceover closes out that scene there by saying, "With everything that's been going on lately, she's fallen behind in her schoolwork. She's really going to have to focus and work hard if she wants to graduate in time to start beauty school in the fall." Girl, this better not mean that Adam has been taking up too much of your fucking time so you can't graduate and do good things with your life. I swear to God, if he brings you down with him, I will be so fucking pissed. In Chelsea's next scene, we see her and Megan leaving the Stewart School and Salon, or whatever the fuck it is, and heading back home to baby Aubrey. The two of them are joking in the car about, wouldn't it be fucking crazy if Adam's there, like, cooking us dinner and Aubrey's sleeping and changed by the time we get home? Wouldn't you just shit your pants if that happened? They continue on even to say, "Look, if he even fed her the baby food, I'll be surprised." Well, 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 much to our surprise and Chelsea and Megan's surprise, when they pull up to the house upon returning home, Adam's friend, and baby Aubrey are all sitting outside for some reason, and Adam is feeding baby Aubrey in her high chair. Looks like a regular picnic. Baby Aubrey is eating the food that Chelsea laid out for her, and also wearing the bib that she put out for Adam to give to her. So, as far as Chelsea's concerned, this is a huge success. She's saying before she even gets out of the car to Megan, because she sees them sitting on the porch, I'm sure that's done purposefully, "Oh my gosh, I'm gonna cry. This is so cute. Adam's doing the bare minimum. I can trust him to be a dad." You know how fucked up that sounds to me? It's just, literally, he did what I asked him to do and didn't fuck it up. The bare minimum. And he also has a random friend over who I guess had to help him not be bored taking care of his daughter. I'm not totally sure. His presence is not exactly explained. Chelsea's voiceover says that this is really reassuring her that maybe she, Aubrey, and Adam can be a real family and make it work. But straight up, I have got to really put out there, they had to do that on purpose. I feel like MTV said, hey, you know, you'll probably want to be feeding this baby food to Aubrey when Chelsea gets back. She's going to love that. It's going to be great for the show. Why don't you set up outside so it's the very first thing she sees? That really sounds like something that a producer would say. Since everything worked out so spectacularly and it is the 4th of July, Chelsea lets Aubrey stay up a little late.
You can stay up a little late.
And Adam sets off a sparkler firecracker thing for Aubrey to watch. It's not loud. It makes that fizzy sound from what I can tell. And I believe that Aubrey and Chelsea are sitting a safe distance away. So that's good. I guess I'm happy that Chelsea's happy, but I'm not happy that I have to see Adam be his dickhead self for at least one more episode. Next up, we have Leah. She has a brief opening scene in which we see her, Corey, and the two girls playing in the living room, much like we saw Chelsea, Aubrey, and Adam. Leah's voiceover tells us that baby Allie is too young to get an MRI and will have to wait 2 months before she can have an appointment. She also tells us that she doesn't know where she and Corey stand on their relationship right now, but she's happy that they're able to spend some time together without being upset with each other. Leah and Corey talk in the living room while they play with the babies about what they think could possibly be wrong with Allie. Leah mentions how she just doesn't understand how can a baby not put weight on her legs. Corey asks her at some point, "Do you think something is wrong with Allie?" Leah says, "I don't want to. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I look at Aaliyah and she's fine. Then why wouldn't Allie be fine?" is her logic. Not understanding that twins, although I think it's probably rare, can have separate diseases like we see here between Allie and Aaliyah. And for a young mother, a new young mother, I don't blame her for being confused and bewildered at how this could possibly be happening to her. And I'm sure there's a good dose of denial in that as well. I feel bad because she's probably going to have a lot of bad news before she has some good news. And having a 2 month wait on top of that just to see what could be going on would really like rack my fucking brain. Part of the reason I couldn't give a podcast these last couple of months, weeks here is because I had to wait on some test procedure thing they wanted me to do, and I literally couldn't bring myself to do jack shit. So I can't imagine being a mother with an infant child having to wait 2 months for an MRI because she can't stand up and support herself. Leah's next scene opens up with her and her mother going to lunch at a restaurant, and her voiceover says that she's been putting on a brave face for Corey and the girls, but she's actually really worried for Allie. Leah takes this opportunity of a safe space with her mother to start talking a little bit about her concerns for Allie.
What did you think about Allie whenever you saw her?
Well, you ain't been wanting to talk about it, but we realized that Allie's not progressing the way Aaliyah is.
I know, but you can't compare them because they're two different babies.
That's true, but she should at least be on a level her age, and she's not.
I know that there's something wrong, but
I don't want to accept it.
I don't want to accept it. And then I think, was it my fault?
No.
I mean, was I not big enough for her? I mean, I think about that all the time because she was squished.
Try not to think like that.
I just want to fix it. Like, I want to make her better. The biggest fear is that she might not ever be able to walk. I wanted her to be able to do the things she wanted to do, whether it was cheering or softball. And that scares me because I'm afraid, what if she can't?
Here's a tissue, baby. No matter what is going on, we will get through this.
I'll be straight up, every time I come to record a session, I forget how fucking depressing Leah's story is. It's so gut-wrenching. God, can you imagine sitting there asking yourself, did my size cause my baby's disability? Was I not enough? The complexes that that can create in people, and the guilt, the immense guilt I'm sure she feels when those thoughts come across her mind. And it's terrible she should have to think this way. She's a petite girl who got pregnant young. Regardless, it's not her fault. It makes me sad because it's one of those things, you know, as a chronic pain and like chronic illness kind of person here, you have a lot of guilt surrounding your body that you cannot do these things. You cannot perform in the way you are meant to or you are expected to perform. A mother carrying twins is expected to carry them. And Leah did, but now one of her twins has a problem and she finds that she might have to blame herself. That makes me so sad for her, and I wish I could pull her out of it and say, hey, you can't think like that, as her mom is trying to do. But when you're in that zone, especially when it comes to your body, personally, for me anyway, when I'm in that zone, there's not going to be a lot that you can say to talk me out of it. In Leah's next scene, her voiceover says, with all the stress she's feeling with baby Allie, she needs a night out to relax and just let go. She invites Corey out to hang out with her while Corey's stepmother watches the girls, and they head out to go bowling. How fucking cute is that? The two of them are shown bowling. Leah tells Corey that he looks cute, and Corey says that Leah looks cute too, and I'm over here like, both of y'all are so fucking cute. Corey actually does look pretty cute here, I'm not even gonna lie, and I don't think he's that attractive personally. Sorry, Corey, I'm sure you're listening. But he's got a hat on, and he's wearing an American Eagle t-shirt with a white t-shirt underneath that. You remember the layered look of the 2000s, the early mid-2000s there. And ripped jeans, ripped and faded jeans, I'm pretty sure. So it's a look, I can't even lie. To go bowling, you're looking pretty good, Corey. The scene continues and we get to watch this adorable date happen. They look like they're having a lot of fun, and it just makes me smile to watch. I can't really explain it. I love watching the two of them interact, and they might be my favorite couple on the show. They finish their game of bowling and Leah wins. Good for her. And as they're walking out, Corey is shown, I don't know, playing with her hair or something. It doesn't look natural at all, but I think this is Corey like putting on the moves. So, okay, bud, whatever. But he's, you know, playing with her hair, brushing it, and says, so what do you think about taking it to the next level?
Well, I had fun.
Yeah, me too.
You did?
Yeah. What do you think about taking it to the next level? I think it's worth a shot.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
All right.
Does that mean that you call me your girlfriend and I call you my boyfriend?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yay, they're boyfriend, girlfriend again. Yay, I'm so happy. Gosh, I hope it lasts. I really hope it lasts. In Leah's next scene, now that she and Corey are back together, officially boyfriend and girlfriend, Leah now has to let her friends know. She's a little nervous because it wasn't too long ago that Corey was dating other people, and you know how that can go when you go back to your friends and you're like, hey, I'm with my ex again. I'm sure Megan and Chelsea's story knows all about that. Even though Leah's voiceover says she needs to tell her friends about she and Corey being back together, we actually only see her tell one friend, and that's her friend Kayla.
So Corey and I are getting back together, like, for real. Like, serious this time.
So yeah, I was like, boyfriend and girlfriend?
Yeah.
When Leah confirms they are in fact boyfriend and girlfriend, Kayla makes a face, and then Leah asks, does that make you mad? At this point, Leah's friend Kayla tells her, well, I think he was acting kind of like a douche, you know, he was dating other girls. Funny, that's what her voiceover just said. He was dating other girls, and then Leah takes the opportunity to say, yeah, and he didn't come to my graduation. So clearly there are still some hurt feelings here. Leah does take a second and she says, but that was in the past and I'm letting it go. I want my family together. I love him. I love my girls and I want us all together. And that's all that matters. I really hope that's all that matters. I really, really do. However, this little scene right here where Leah seems to just jump on the first opportunity to talk shit about things that Corey used to do, despite having just gone on this really nice date with him possibly a couple days ago, I don't have a good feeling about that. I'm hoping it's nothing. I'm hoping it's not a problem. She ends the scene saying that it's going to be okay, they're going to stick it out, and importantly, they need to learn how to work through their fights, you know, have an argument and not have the other person storm away or walk out. That is another thing she says in this scene, which gives me a little bit of hope. You know, she is acknowledging the past, saying that she wants to move on from it, and placing a goal. We want to be able to do this. We need to be able to do this to be better support for our girls. So I like this scene, but I'm worried. We just started back on the right foot, and she's like, oh yeah, and he didn't come to my graduation. Mm-hmm. Son of a goddamn bitch, if I didn't know it. In Leah's next scene, she and Corey are talking about, well, Corey, why did you fall back in love with me? What made you decide to want to be with me all of a sudden? Corey's response, of course, is that, well, he had never really fallen out of love with her. She had been on his mind the entire time when they were apart, her and the girls, of course. But the main thing, Corey says, was when Leah came over and told him everything about Allie's condition and how the doctor appointment went. And I think he's referring to the scene where the two of them are holding each other and very upset about Allie's condition. And Leah is just crying, and we were all crying. Remember that? Corey says that that is what really drew him back into Leah and back into the relationship. I can tell you, as a woman, looking at the look on Leah's face by this response, it was not what she wanted to hear. To all of us watching, that was very obvious. Clearly, he was moved by this traumatic event with his daughter and felt the need to be there as a father and a boyfriend, husband figure, however you want to think of him, for Leah. But when he says this out loud, Leah's face gets this very pursed kind of, just pursed lips, pressed together, a little curved at the side, but not smiling. That kind of look, you know, the look when someone says something you don't like and you don't have enough energy to mask. Leah's response to this answer that she did not like comes off in a bit of an instigating kind of way. She goes on to say, well, Corey, I can't quite hear this part, so you might have to work with me. Well, Corey, I never thought you would grow thick skin. I think that's what she says. Because you kept pulling me in and shutting me down. Remember, you were supposed to come to my graduation? I told you that would mean a lot to me. I fucking knew it. Of course the graduation is going to come up. It's like she had that conversation with her friend. Now it's in her mind. And instead of thinking rationally and truly leaving it in the past as she said she was going to, she's allowing her emotions about that event to affect her relationship now. Can you tell I've been doing a lot of therapy in the last few months? Oh my God. Seriously though, what we see here is Leah acting on an uncomfortable emotion and wanting to get an answer out of Corey immediately. That is not a great course of action here, because now we're just having this tense conversation where Corey probably went into it thinking everything was fine, or at least thinking they weren't going to have an argument, and now hurt feelings are being brought up, stuff that he probably thought was left in the past. Thankfully, as the scene continues, it doesn't blow up into a huge argument or any truly awkward moments for me to have to relay to you. But Corey does tell her, look, there was a long time where I didn't trust you. And now, after 5 months of hanging out, getting to know you again, I trust you now, and I'm willing to commit to you and only you from this day forward. Damn, Corey. Okay, come on over, babe. Corey then asks if Leah trusts him. And she says it's going to take a bit because not 2 weeks ago, what were you doing? Corey admits he was with another girl. Obviously, I think this was before their bowling date where they made it official. But that is really close to be like seeing other people. As far as we know, as far as MTV is showing us, Leah wasn't dating any other guys during this time. Ironic because she cheated on Corey, but still interesting to see that as a juxtaposition, if that's truly the case. After hashing that little bit out, Leah also agrees that she's ready to commit to only him. So that's nice to hear, but there's still this tense feeling that I'm getting from this scene that I don't really like. It doesn't make me feel confident in the two of them. Regardless, Leah says we leave it in the past and we never talk about it again. Now, I don't know enough to say whether or not that's healthy. I want to say that if it's a sensitive topic, obviously if you're seeing other people and that's hurtful to the person to remember, don't bring that up. But for now, they agree to leave it behind them, start fresh, hopefully, and work this relationship out on their own terms. When we next see Leah and Corey, they are hanging out at the house, being a couple and doing the mommy and daddy thing, and also celebrating 4th of July. Corey and Leah are getting the girls ready to go to a cookout at Corey's uncle's house, where all the family is gathering for 4th of July fun. On the way there, Leah mentions that she thinks it's the first holiday they've ever spent all together, and she's really excited about that. They arrive at the party and everyone is just oohing and aahing over the baby girls. It's so fucking cute. I swear I was watching it like with my hands on my cheeks. Just adorable. I love seeing grandparents fawn over their grandchildren. It is the sweetest thing and it makes me cry. As the family is eating and catching up, they ask Leah and Corey what they're doing for the rest of the night. Leah mentions that they'd like to go to fireworks and asks Papa Jeff and Corey's stepmother if they would like to watch the girls. Papa Jeff says, of course, they always want to watch the girls. So that's great. They get a night to themselves. They asked politely for babysitting help, received babysitting help readily, and now can go enjoy the 4th of July fireworks, being a responsible couple trying to take care of baby girls. So I'm happy they get this time to themselves to really enjoy. And to top it all off, when they get there, Corey says to Leah, I have a surprise for you. They're shown walking through the crowd of people waiting to see the fireworks. And as they get closer, Corey points to a boat that's sitting on a near lake or river or what the fuck ever it is, and says to Leah, we're going on that boat to watch the fireworks. Probably something MTV coordinated, but still really fucking cool. And I don't know, I just like to see these two happy because, God, such a hard hand has been dealt to them. And even if they make questionable decisions, they deserve to be happy. The scene continues and eventually closes out on the two of them enjoying the fireworks from the boat, exclaiming and looking at how pretty they are and just enjoying each other's company. The two of them also discuss that this is kind of like a new beginning for us, you know, just you, me, and the girls. It's going to be great. And my fingers are crossed, guys. My fingers are crossed. Next up, we have Miss Janelle. Oh boy. Janelle's scene opens with her voiceover reminding us that her mom let her move back home, but she's still filing for custody of Jace. Janelle wants to prove that she's responsible, so we see her going out and applying for multiple jobs around the town. We even see her sit down and talk to a few managers, it looks like, but I can't imagine that was very comfortable for any of them to have the camera crew in there during the interview, but I have a feeling we'll see more and more of this as we get further into the Teen Mom franchise. When Janelle returns home, she goes to hang out with Jace a little bit in the living room and makes a few phone calls about how to transfer her credits from one something to another something for college, I think. As Janelle is doing this, Jace is in his swinging chair with his bottle and at some point drops the bottle and starts crying.
Hi, I just graduated South early. How do I transfer my credits from BCC over to Cape Fear? If you can please call me back, that'd be great. All right, well, they didn't want to answer. Jace, please, hold on. Jace, hold on. Don't. You throw it one more time, I'm not getting it. Okay, that's it, not getting it. I know. But I've got to get this done. Jace, you want me to rock you?
Nah, bitch. I want my fucking bottle. I want the bottle that I dropped in front of you directly to see if you would pick it up for me over and over again to see if I could trust you to always pick up the bottle every time I drop it because you know I need it to live and of course you would always want me to live. And now I know that I can't trust you because apparently after 2 times of me dropping the bottle in front of your fucking face, you're already tired of cleaning up my fucking mess. Well, some mother you are. The scene continues and Janelle picks up Jace, sits down in the rocking chair, and begins to rock him back and forth, as if she hadn't just completely broken any and all trust he had in her as his mother. To close out that scene, Janelle's voiceover tells us, with everything that she wants to do with her life right now, her mom just might be in a better place to raise Jace. Yeah, everything you want to do with your life. I haven't really seen much of that, but I'll give her the benefit of the doubt for now, I guess. Janelle's next scene opens with Janelle playing with baby Jace and her voiceover letting everybody know that she's trying very hard to be responsible and take care of Jace, but with everything going on, she's really starting to think that fighting with her mom for custody right now isn't the best choice. As the two of them are playing on the floor, something happens, I'm not totally sure, where Jace starts crawling away and Janelle playfully, you know, grabs him. It's a total parent move, nothing out of the ordinary here. But what I wanted to comment on is that when Janelle grabs him, Jace makes a little screaming sound. He's not hurt, but, you know, probably shocked. Oh my God, that kind of thing. After he screams, Mike, Barbara's boyfriend, peeks his head into the room and says, "What, you pinch him? Oh, you're playing with him." Why the fuck would he think Janelle was just hanging out pinching Jace? Does that happen very often? I don't know why. It just struck me as so odd that this guy comes in and is like, "Did you pinch the baby? Oh, no, you're playing with him." He probably can't believe his fucking eyes. Janelle is playing with the baby? Oh my God. But I thought that was very an interesting comment. Did you pinch him? No. I didn't fucking pinch the baby. Even Janelle's not that stupid, I don't think. As the scene continues and Janelle is playing with baby Jace, Janelle eventually makes her way outside on the porch where Barbara is sitting, and she's ready to have a talk with her. It looks like that the thoughts from Janelle's previous scene, where she's thinking, maybe I do want to hand over custody, is coming to fruition now. Janelle sits down with Barbara and tells her point blank, "I'm going to sign temporary custody over to you because when you kicked me out, I realized I can't even take care of myself. There's no way I'm going to be able to take care of Jace as well." Wow, another rare moment of lucidity for Janelle. I wonder how many of these we're going to get throughout the series. Barbara is pleased with this decision, of course, and says that, "I think you're making the right move, Janelle. Aren't you feeling a little less pressure now, a little bit more relief?" And Janelle answers, "No, absolutely not. I feel more pressure." According to her, now she has to get school done and do everything right so she can get custody back. Yeah, I think we're going to be hearing that for a long time to come. As Janelle and Barbara are talking on the porch, Janelle brings up what is actually sounding like a really sensitive topic to her. She brings up her dad. I'm not sure how often this happens, but take a listen. Listen to her voice. There's a bit of a quiver in it that I am not used to hearing. I'll listen for it more now that I hear it, but just tell me what you think.
"Well, you know, growing up when I was with Daddy, he used to tickle me. He used to bring me places. He used to buy me stuff. And then he just completely stopped and just stopped being around. And I mean, it hurts to know that your parent just walks out on you."
"I know it hurts.
You know, that's one reason. And I'm definitely not going to be a parent like that."
I personally hear a lot of hurt in her voice in the beginning of that clip. It's clear that she's experienced this parental abandonment and doesn't want to repeat that with Jace. So why then, I have to ask, has she spent the last however long going out doing whatever she wants to the point where Barbara has to even threaten to take custody away? At least they've come to this agreement where, okay, Mom, you can have custody. But if she's been so hurt, how can she possibly go out and be doing these things, separating herself from Jace? Is it that Jace is so young, he doesn't know if I'm here or not? Is it ignorance? Perhaps in a baby's development and how important it is to have your actual parental figure stable and present in your life from an early age. Maybe she thinks it doesn't start counting until you're 4 or 5 and suddenly you start to remember things, and maybe that's when Janelle's dad started ditching her. So she's like, okay, well, I've got 5 or 6 years before I can do any real trauma to Jace, so I'm just going to go to the bar. I don't know. It has to be a mix of ignorance, lack of education, and possibly just a little sociopathy. I mean, right? In Janelle's next scene, the day has already arrived to sign over temporary custody of Jace to Barbara. You have no fucking idea how hard that sentence is to say when you're high as fuck. Janelle's voiceover tells the viewers that they are going to drop Jace off at daycare and head over to the courthouse to sign these documents. It seems like kind of just another day, but there is music in the background of the scene to make you think that it's very serious. They arrive at the courthouse and Barbara's lawyer meets them in some room, and they sit down, go over the paperwork. Barbara's lawyer explains that this is a temporary arrangement, but that doesn't mean that the custody has an end date. It can last from one day all the way up to when Jace is 18 years old. So it's very interesting to know that's how temporary custody works, but I think just knowing the Janelle Barbara Jace saga, it's clear that temporary custody can be a little bit longer than temporary. The lawyer lets them know that they will have to return to court to determine permanent custody if that is something they would ever choose to do. Both Barbara and Janelle say they understand and they sign the papers. Ultimately, it seems like a very anticlimactic moment. They sign the papers, he goes to make a copy, and then it's over. Janelle has a very blank expression on her face, but it does feel like there's a lot going on behind her eyes. Perhaps she's contemplating what she's just done, concerned if she's made the right choice, and hoping perhaps that she's not losing too much. This is just me looking at her. I have no idea if this is accurate. Janelle's voiceover closes out the scene by saying, "I'm glad we're not going to court, but I hope I'm making the right choice." In Janelle's next scene, she allays all the viewers' worries about did she make the right choice by saying, "I think I made the right choice for Jace by signing over the custody papers to my mom." Okay, great, we get it. The scene itself starts with Janelle having a conversation with her friend Amber. This is the friend who I believe we've seen already a few times has hung out with her during her pregnancy, and we will continue to see her going forward within the Teen Mom 2 seasons. Amber is asking some legitimate questions, but almost with a incredulous tone. It's kind of interesting. She starts, "So what made you want to sign it and just give your mom over custody?" It very much sounds like she's asking Janelle, "Why the fuck did you do that?" It very much sounds like that. But Janelle's kind of ready and locked and loaded to answer that question.
"So what made you want to sign it and just go ahead and give her custody?"
"Because I want to get my life together. I want, like, by, you know, starting college, getting my career going, you know, I want to find a job to work during the day."
"Like, how is it going to switch back and you get custody? Like, how does that happen?"
"Well, I can fight for it at any time. I just need to go up to the court and tell them I want to fight for it."
"What if she kicks you out again and then she has custody?"
"As long as I have my head on straight, I don't think she'll kick me out. She set all these rules. I've been following all the rules. We haven't been arguing as much. And now that I signed the papers over, I mean, I'm going to have to do what I have to do to stay in this house."
Yeah, she's been following all the rules. They haven't been fighting as much. Everything is hunky-dory and going to be okay. Later that day, Barbara is shown walking around the house, getting ready, I think, to leave for work or something along those lines, and Janelle is babysitting. I guess you call it babysitting. I don't really know when it's your mom, but she doesn't have custody. Whatever. Janelle is babysitting Jace. Barbara is trying to prep Janelle on everything she might need to watch baby Jace that afternoon. She tells her that he may need Tylenol between 2 and 3 because she thinks he's running a little bit of a fever. Janelle is shown to repeat back to her, "Okay, Motrin." Barbara says, "No, not Motrin. We're out of Motrin." And Janelle says, "Whatever, same thing." Barb says, "No, not the same thing." But she's not angry. This is me adding that in. Because I can't believe it's such a simple thing. Like, you're really just sitting there. You can't listen closely enough to what medicine your child needs, all at the same time trying to emphasize the fact with this scene, as her voiceover does say, I know I did sign custody over to my mom, but I'm still Jace's mother, and I want to have a part in his upbringing. And this is how you do it? By not even remembering Tylenol versus Motrin and what your baby needs and why? Thank God she was able to tell Barbara, yeah, between 2 and 3. Thank God. I wasn't expecting that much. However, we're not out of the woods yet. As Barbara is leaving the house, she mentions something about the car seat. Gotta get the car seat. Janelle says, actually, leave the car seat here. That way Jason, I don't know who Jason is, a miscellaneous friend, I assume, Jason can take Jace and I up to the food line. And before she can even finish, Barb comes back in and says, you cannot go anywhere alone with the baby. Of course, this starts an argument. It doesn't blow up. It doesn't get crazy, like shouting at each other on the sidewalk or anything like that. But Barbara does come back strong with her command not to take the baby anywhere alone. She goes on to yell that she has custody papers of that baby and she cannot allow her to take the baby anywhere by herself. Barbara continues to yell before she walks out the door, if you're going to pull this shit, I'm just going to take him with me. I guess it doesn't get to that point because Barbara does walk out the door and gives Janelle a very cold bye. Janelle doesn't answer audibly, but we can hear her say under her breath, fine, go, bye, don't come back, good riddance. So yeah, we're really getting off to a great start with them not fighting as much anymore. I gotta say, when I was younger and I watched this scene, I didn't understand why Barbara, one, came on so strongly about Janelle not taking the baby by herself, and two, why, in general, Barbara didn't want Janelle taking the baby by herself. I was part of the immature camp that said, well, Janelle is still the mom. Like, yeah, you have custody, but she should be able to take the baby up to the store if she wants to. Well, that's like 19-year-old me thinking. 31-year-old me? Yeah, 31. 31-year-old me says, wow, she must seriously not trust Janelle at all to disallow her from leaving the house with the baby whatsoever. Obviously, if she's going out with friends that maybe Barbara doesn't know very well, that's another added layer of why you cannot fucking take the baby. And watching it now, I don't blame her for having such a visceral reaction. There may not be any other way to get it through to Janelle that you cannot leave the house with this baby. Oh, honey, no, I would really prefer if you stay home. That will not work. I'm sure she's tried that with Janelle thousands of times, and it's gotten to the point to where this is how they communicate now. Janelle, you cannot leave the house with the baby. And that's it. I don't know what happens. Her scene ends after Barbara walks out. But it is very interesting to see just how alarmed Barbara becomes when Janelle mentions this, and I think that really speaks to Janelle's irresponsibility as a young woman. Unfortunate, but accurate. Janelle's voiceover ends out that scene by saying, signing the custody papers seemed like the right thing to do, but it's not going to be easy making things work with my mom. In Janelle's next scene, we find out that someone was actually dumb enough to hire her. Janelle's voiceover happily informs us that she's gotten a job at the local pub as a waitress. I guess good for her. We see her getting ready to leave, saying goodbye to Jace, and driving off to her first day at work. Janelle is shown doing a few different tasks, serving food, getting drinks, and ultimately clocking out for the day. Her voiceover comes in at that point and tells the viewer that the best thing about having a job and making her own money is that she can buy things for Jace and herself. The scene then transitions to Janelle being shown holding a bunch of bags, walking in her front door.
Here she is, the missing mother. How much did you buy?
I'll show you in a second.
What did she buy?
She went and bought more stuff for herself. Unbelievable. Janelle, you bought more for yourself than you bought for the baby.
Really? The reason why I got that skirt is because these are the only shorts I have.
What skirt?
I didn't show you. It was only $3.
Janelle, you gotta stop spending so much money.
And what else did you buy?
Since you bought a whole bunch of stuff for
yourself. No, I only bought two things. And I bought this.
Oh, that's cute. You should wear dresses. You look cute in dresses.
Ooh, I might wear that tonight, actually.
What? Where are you going now? I want to go to the fireworks.
I want to take him to the fireworks.
Well, you can't take him this year.
No.
And yeah. You are not allowed to take him out alone. So that's how it is.
It seems like no matter what I do, nothing is good enough for my mom. And now she's trying to keep me away from Jace.
Okay, so not gonna lie, I really wanted to chime in when Janelle said, "Really? You know why I bought this skirt? Because these are the only shorts I have." I wanted to say, "What the fuck does that even mean, Janelle? What does that even mean?" But I have to use my basic reasoning skills here and say that she needs that skirt for work. And honestly, it's not a bad move because she probably will get more tips. Just saying, that's how the world works. It's not my choice. I can't fix the world. Regardless, we hear Janelle saying, "Oh, I only bought a few things," but she does have a lot in the bag, so who knows how much she actually bought for herself versus Jace. I'm a little bit willing to go with Barbara on this one and say that she did buy way more stuff for herself than Jace, but at least the skirt actually can be written off, so to speak. That is a valid expense. Of course, we then heard the slight eruption happen when Janelle mentioned that, "Oh, I'll wear this dress tonight." What are you doing tonight? So mad, so quick. It caught me a little bit off guard, I can't even lie. However, it's valid because why do you have to keep going out, Janelle? I thought you were trying to work hard on getting the baby back. Whatever. She wants to go to the fireworks for 4th of July. She wants to take a small baby who is, I don't think, a year old. Sorry, guys. Like I said, I can't remember how old these kids are now. She wants to take a small child to fireworks, probably without any ear protection. I can't imagine Janelle thought ahead and got him earmuffs while she was out. Definitely not. And as we hear Barbara remind her, she can't leave the house with a baby anyway. So just get that right out of your head, Janelle. You're not going anywhere with Jace. It's not going to happen. Her voiceover at the end wraps it all together in that it says, "And now she's trying to keep me away from Jace on top of everything else." No, Janelle, she is reinforcing a boundary that she already made with you, that you cannot take the baby by yourself. You are choosing to go out to see fireworks, something that a small baby cannot do without the proper ear protection. And also, you're going out and spending probably what is either your first paycheck or your first big tip day on a whole bunch of random shit that you probably don't need, and that is, sounds like, more than 50% for you, not for the baby. I will say, I think she came in carrying diapers. I'm gonna have to go back and check. So that's one thing. I know those aren't cheap. But clearly Barbara is still seeing some irresponsible behavior here, and also the idea that she doesn't think twice about taking the baby to the fireworks probably sets off red alarms for Barbara as well. I don't know why Janelle has to see it in this twisted sense of Barbara's trying to keep the baby away from me. It goes back to that whole idea of, "No, don't you feed that baby." She's telling her, "Don't take the baby to a loud fireworks show when I've already told you you can't go out with him." Obviously, the answer is stay home. Do you have anything the equivalent of 4th of July fireworks? Watch like a symphony on TV. I don't fucking know. Do anything that will allow you to stay home if being with Jace is so fucking important to you. In Janelle's final scene, she ends up going to the fireworks with one of her friends, Amber, without baby Jace. Janelle is shown talking to Amber about how frustrated she is that she can't bring baby Jace to the fireworks and how she didn't freak out about it with her mom. She just tried to brush it off, but she's still really upset. As the two of them are sitting there talking, another group of people walk by who presumably have a baby, and Janelle turns to her friend Amber and says, "Why can that baby come? That baby's smaller than Jace." Okay, I'm not sure that's the point, but okay. Janelle's friend Amber takes this opportunity to say, "Do you think it's just because of the custody agreement now that it's official, or do you think this is just your mother being your mother as far as not being allowed to take Jace places?" Janelle answers that she thinks that it is mostly her mom being her mom, because even before she signed these custody papers, she still didn't want Janelle taking Jace out by herself. I personally still maintain that this is because Janelle is just overall an irresponsible girl. Amber tells Janelle that she really thinks that she should take some time out and talk to her mom about raising Jace, being able to take him places, and overall just her involvement in his life, even with this new custody arrangement. Janelle agrees. Not long after the fireworks start and the whole crowd is watching, we hear Janelle say, "Jace would have loved this." And I can't help but think, how the fuck do you know? First of all, he's, I think, not even 1 year old. You don't know what a 1 year old is going to like. Yeah, it's bright lights and pretty colors, but it's also loud. I was afraid of loud noises when I was little, and I still am. It's a trauma response. Shut up. But the fact is, we don't want little baby Jace having these trauma responses because he was exposed to fireworks too early. You know what I mean? And it sounds silly, but it's something you have to think about. That is a loud, jarring sound for a small child. He's only used to two women screaming at each other all day and all night. I have no idea what a firework would do to a small baby like that. Perhaps that other baby in the crowd has earmuffs that Janelle didn't fucking see, because who knows what the fuck that family is doing or their reasons for being there. Very presumptuous of her to even say anything about that baby. On top of not even really knowing if Jace would like something like this, we also have to take into account that Janelle is saying that because she likes fireworks. She likes going out and hanging out with her friends. So the narcissist in her, obviously, Jace would love this too. Jace would love this. Bitch, shut up. You don't fucking know what Jace wants or what Jace needs because you're doing whatever and not paying close enough attention to him at any given time to even say what he likes or dislikes. You don't even know why he's throwing his fucking bottle on the ground, bitch. So don't fucking talk to me about how old you have to be to go to a fucking fireworks show. And finally, we catch up with Kaylin. Kale's voiceover starts the scene by reminding the viewers that she is still living in her ex-boyfriend Joe's house, but ever since he discovered that she's been kinda sorta seeing somebody else besides him, things have been pretty tough around there, and she's worried she's going to get kicked out. The scene starts off with Kale changing Isaac's diaper and asking Joe for a wipe. He does not respond to her or even acknowledge her, but when she asks a second time, he irritably answers, "I know, I heard you, I heard you, I heard you, I heard you." Okay, fine, but you could have said that before when we weren't trying to figure out if we needed a hearing aid or not. The scene continues and we briefly cut to showing Joe and his brother in the basement of the house playing with what looks to be a home version of those basketball arcade games that I love. So cool. But essentially, this is just Joe venting about Kale and how she shouldn't be seeing other guys if she's living in his house. You would think that would be common sense, or at least if she was going to have the balls to do something like that, she wouldn't post it all over the internet like she did in the previous episode where she just threw up in a relationship on Facebook, which we all know what that meant back in 2010, 2011. It was kind of a big deal. Kale's voiceover comes in and says that Joe's not the only one that's mad at her. We then see Kale walking into the living room to face Janet and Eddie, and I think they're going to talk about this whole thing with Kale dating another guy.
I just think that we should figure stuff out about me dating someone else and everything, because I know you guys are upset about it.
My problem with it is that now is not the time. There are other more important things in your life right now, and that is Isaac, your education and your career. I told you that from the beginning.
You know how bad you look? Going to hang out with another guy.
And the chances of you getting pregnant again from someone else.
I would not do that. I'm not going to have sex with anyone else.
How do you know that?
Because I'm not going to let myself getting, do that.
You're already saying you're in a relationship with this guy.
I don't want to be going behind your back or anyone's back or being disrespectful or lying to you guys. I don't want to do that.
Well, I wish you would have thought about that before you blatted it all over Facebook. You want to continue your relationship with this boy?
I want to work things out here first.
If you're going to continue with this relationship, is this guy that important to you? And maybe start talking to him about moving in with him or moving out and staying somewhere else. You make a choice. It's your life. But don't take my grandson down with you, okay?
I don't want to have to choose between dating and having a home for me and Isaac.
Wow. Okay, a couple of crazy takeaways from that. First of all, Kale, no one is telling you to choose between dating and having a home for your son and yourself. You should fucking know better than to risk that. You're not being made to choose. You've made some choices already that has now compromised your security and Isaac's security. You weren't thinking ahead. Granted, I feel like this is a very strong reaction, but Janet does put it in perspective here and tells Kale, hey, you know what? If it's that serious with this guy that you won't stop seeing him in order to preserve your son and yourself, move in with him. Figure it out with him. If it's really like that, deal with that with him. And I gotta say, she's got serious balls to say that, but she's not wrong. She's right. She's totally right. If it's really that deep for Kale with fucking Jordan, I guess, she should not have to have this big scary moment. She should be able to be like, hun, they don't want me anymore. Can I move in with you? And he should be like, yes, because they are crazy and only crazy people do things like that. But I'm just saying, if that's the level that Kale thinks it's at, she should be able to have that backup in Jordan, but we all know that she doesn't. And also interesting to note Eddie's comments, do you know how bad you look doing that? And Janet chiming in, and the idea that you could possibly get pregnant again. I would usually be mad at something like that because Eddie's comment by itself, I don't like. I really don't. And he's said things like this before that we've heard in the series, just things that are presumptuous and stereotypical. Do you know how bad you look because you've made an ill-advised choice at a young age? You know what I'm saying? I don't like that. But when Janet comes in with, and the chance that you could get pregnant again, part of me says that's stereotypical too. That's categorizing and compartmentalizing her too. However, the statistics do show that a young mother is more likely to get pregnant again within like the next 5 years or something like that. And honestly, isn't that kind of the pattern we see with a lot of these people, these women on this show? So I can't really blame Janet for that comment. It's not too far out of line because it's factually accurate, just maybe not personally accurate for Kaylin. I will say it does suck that Janet doesn't have Kale's back. Really, think about it. Think about the last few episodes where we've seen Kale completely crying and in tears while Janet was holding her, trying to make her feel better while she was pregnant. I can't believe that we've gotten to this stage so quickly where we're talking about having her move out and Eddie talking to her like she's some kind of harlot or something. It just upsets me to see, but also kind of a product of her own choices. In Kale's next scene, she is meant to be going to her college orientation, but it turns out that her ride ditched her last minute, so now she has to find someone else to help her out. We see Kale making a few phone calls with no success, and her voiceover says that since Joe is out of the question and her mother is working, she has to ask Joe's brother, Junior. Junior does end up agreeing to take her, which is great, but it does make me wonder, why could she ask Junior, who is a part of the family, obviously, but she couldn't ask Janet or Eddie, who we see walking around the house during this scene as she's making her phone calls and trying to find Junior and trying to figure out how to get to this orientation. Oh, and Jordan was also unavailable if I didn't mention him before. But Joe's brother is gracious enough to give her a ride, so she and Isaac end up at the orientation on time as scheduled, so that's really good. We see Kale going through the normal community college orientation process. She's in a lecture hall, getting greeted, signing up, taking her ID photos, all with a little baby in a carrier on her arm. Honestly, more props to her. Just watching her carry that baby carrier around makes my arm hurt. Jesus Christ, I have enough trouble carrying the fucking groceries from my car to my apartment. No fucking way am I going to be carrying a goddamn baby all around a community college all day. Just thinking about it is giving me a headache and an arm ache. So more power to her for figuring out and getting it done. That's the one thing that I can always give Kale credit for. She does get shit done. She might make some dumbass choices and have some questionable morals, perhaps, but she knows what she's got to do. And by the end of it, she's ready to start college. In Kale's next scene, her voiceover tells us that she was really starting to like Jordan, but she's starting to realize that if she and Isaac want a place to live, she may have to cut her relationship short. The scene opens with Kale, baby Isaac, and one of Kale's brilliant friends, Kim, who helped suggest the whole post it on Facebook idea, are hanging out, looks like at a picnic table, possibly at a park, just talking about the current situation. The scene actually opens with this Kim chick saying to baby Isaac, "Your daddy's being really mean to your mommy. So are grandma and grandpa." Okay, I know he's literally probably 6 months old. I don't remember their ages. You give me 2 months between a session, no way am I going to remember how old they are. So that's out the window. Sorry about that, guys. Either way, you're talking to a 6 month old or something. He's probably not understanding what you're saying. However, I think it's super, super shitty to be audibly saying that out loud, like your daddy is treating your mommy bad. Those words are still going to trigger something in that child's head somewhere deep in his psyche, I would imagine. I don't know anything about child psychology. I did not take that class. But what I can tell you is that there's no reason to be saying that. You can say Joe, you can say Janet and Eddie. We don't need to be using these names that only the baby know them by. Why risk it? I don't understand. After that not-so-subtle segue, Kim, Kale's friend, says to her, "I don't even want to ask how that's going," which allows Kale to elaborate a little bit on the current situation. It's nothing we as viewers don't know, but this is kind of the recap conversation with a friend. And ultimately, Kim asks her, "Are you going to stay with Jordan? It doesn't sound like it's really going to work out. What do you think?" And Kale just shakes her head no. Okay, so that's good. Looks like it's a tough decision for Kale, though. When she shakes her head, she's smiling. And I feel like, as someone who does that herself, the smile is to hide any hurt emotions, any hurt feelings, possibly any tears, because she doesn't want to appear weak, especially on camera. And I think coming especially from a daughter of an addict, this is definitely something that you learn, a defense mechanism. You cannot show how you're really feeling because that allows an opportunity for perhaps someone who is inebriated and also feeling abusive to come down on you and provides them a vulnerable moment in which to hurt you. So you learn to cover that, I assume. Kim supports Kale's decision, which is great, and says, "Well, if you need to break up with Jordan in order to have a place to stay, that's kind of what you need to do." And she continues, "If you want to be with Jordan down the line, you can still do that. It might just be sooner than we think." Kale's next scene starts with a pleasant surprise. Apparently, according to Kale's voiceover, her mother has been feeling guilty about missing her orientation, so she's giving Kale her car. Wow. Kale's mom hands off the paperwork and the keys to the car and says, "There you go, you own it free and clear." Amazing. It's an older car, even for the time of this episode airing, but still a very gracious gift, and if you understand people like that the way I do, ooh, she must have felt really fucking bad for that, to have a car. I got a ukulele because of a very bad argument that an ex and I had. And then, like, a day later, he shows up, "Here's this ukulele." Like, wow, thanks. This doesn't make up for all the emotional abuse you gave to me the other day, but I guess I can play some nice songs now. So, great. Kale is shown getting into the car and driving off into the sunset, and her voiceover says that she's excited about this new car, but she's not excited that she's going to have to break up with Jordan. We see Kale pulling into a parking lot, and giving Jordan a call. It's a sad call, but it does go over pretty well considering the circumstances. Kale tells Jordan that she has promised, since she's staying at Joe's house, that she wouldn't date anybody else for the duration. So she doesn't think that she and Jordan can see each other anymore. She feels really bad and she's really sorry. And it really does sound like she means it. I guess it's kind of weird because this whole time she's been living at Joe's house. So to have this be the explanation, Like, oh, since I'm living at Joe's house, I promised this. I personally would have a lot more questions if I were Jordan. Jordan's only response is, that's understandable. See you at work. You know, Kale says, see you at work, bye. And he says, okay, see you at work, bye. It goes fine. It's okay. But if I were Jordan, I'd be like, well, why the fuck did you start dating me in the first place? Because now I'm sad. You know, he sounds very sad. It's not a happy moment. I don't understand why that is her opening line. Perhaps they had already broken up and this is MTV filming it for the story, something like that. I would be pissed off if I were Jordan. The scene continues and transitions to Kale having ice cream with her friends and Kale's voiceover saying that even though she's really upset about Jordan, she always has her friends to cheer her up. So I can say pretty positively that this is definitely a scene they have created to recap everything that happened with Jordan. When Kale walks in, they're sitting outside. When Kale walks over to their table, they all say, hi, Kale, how are you doing? And the first thing that she says is, Jordan and I broke up. Okay, fine. She sits down, but her friends react, what, huh? And one of them has this dumbass fucking smile on her face. Just like, what do you mean you broke up? I've never heard this before in my entire life.
This is the first I've heard of it. I am shocked. That's what I mean. I am appalled.
Me and Jordan broke up.
What?
Why? Janet and Eddie made such a big deal about it. So we broke up. I understand where they're coming from as far as like me bringing Isaac around another guy. But yeah. I just don't understand how it's their business if I date someone else and don't bring him around the house. Like, how does that concern them? Like,
because they're looking out for their son. Even though Joe says he doesn't want to be with you, they're still looking out.
Joe's been telling me for so long he didn't want to be with me. So I finally get that through my head and I start dating someone else and now it's a problem.
How would you feel if he was with someone else, like another girl? Like, are you okay with that?
At this point, I almost wish that he would try to find somebody else so that I don't feel guilty for not wanting to be with him.
I just wish I could support myself and be away from, like, Joe and his family just because I know that's what's, like, the only way it's going to solve most of the problems. But at the same time, they're, like, the only family that's actually been there for me.
So Kale presents a couple interesting ideas. She admits here that the solution probably is moving out of Joe's house and supporting herself, getting out there on her own. I think it's also an interesting point, and one that I believe I've touched on during our sessions here, about she doesn't understand what the problem is if she's seeing a guy and not bringing him around the house. Well, okay, first of all, her friends point out Janet and Eddie are just looking out for their son. True. Secondly, she's still bringing Jordan around the baby. She's not bringing him around the house, but she is bringing Jordan around the baby. The baby is seeing Jordan. Jordan exists to the baby. You know what I mean? And that's the problem, truly, I think, personally, because when you step back from it, it's a messy situation all around. In no way is this living scenario healthy for anybody involved. Not for the parents, obviously not for Kaylin, not for Joe, and not for Isaac. And I guess Joe's brother is just kind of floating around there giving rides when he can. I don't know. Regardless, the solution is a different living situation. But I have to ask, as a quote-unquote impartial viewer, why take on, why take on your son's baby mama? And then I got to the baby mama part. That's why. They need to take care of their grandson. I get that. We also know that we can't trust Kaylin to keep Isaac away from boys that she sees. And that's not good. That's a dependency issue at that point. When you're already introducing your infant son to a guy you've been seeing for maybe a month, that's not cool. And that, I think, is where the problem lies. And of course, we have heard Janet and Eddie express their concerns. What if you get pregnant again? How could you be dating somebody so quickly? Blah, 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 blah. All valid. And I get that. I don't think anybody is handling this well. That also brings up, what does Kale mean when she says, I wish Joe would date someone else at this point so I wouldn't feel so bad about not wanting to be with him? From everything I have seen, and from everything I think we have discussed here on About This Time of Day, It does not seem like Joe wants to be with Kale at all. Is that a falsehood presented by MTV? Does he really want to be with Kale? We haven't seen that. We've seen them arguing constantly. We've seen Joe being a dick to her and, by proxy, baby Isaac over and over and over again. Nowhere in here would I see any reason for Kale to feel bad about not wanting to be with Joe, because it seems pretty clear that neither of them want to be together. So again, I have to ask, how are we doing this living situation? It's confusing, and since we don't know all the details, I can't really comment exactly on this is right or this is wrong. I can just tell you this shit's messy, and it shouldn't have even gotten this far. Kale's next scene, and I think it's her last scene, is short and confusing. Kale's voiceover tells us that she initially had plans with Jordan to watch 4th of July fireworks, but since they had to break up, she needs to stay home at Joe's house where she, quote-unquote, is not even wanted. Kale is shown sitting in some room of Joe's house with some other girl who looks to be about her age, and her name shows, whatever her name is, but her title is Joe's cousin. So there's a family party happening at Joe's house, which Kale is choosing not to be a part of. I don't know. I can't say that Janet and Eddie would be so shitty as to say, don't hang out with us at this party. But I can see Joe being that much of a dick to where she would want to make herself scarce. Yeah, I went and rewatched the beginning of the scene again, and it really looks like there's a party happening that it's either too uncomfortable for Kale to be a part of, or she is deliberately choosing not to be a part of. Joe's cousin, who I now see is named Naomi, asks Kaylin, well, what are your friends doing tonight? And Kale gets this really shit-ass attitude on and says, well, Megan invited me to a party, but obviously I can't go to that because I don't have a sitter, and she doesn't even know what everybody else is doing. And then quickly follows those comments up with, but it's okay because you're here. And I cannot tell you the look on this girl's face, not Naomi's because I can't see her face, but Kaylin's. She just looks like a snotty ass teenager who is not getting her way, rolling her eyes and, oh, but it's okay, you're here. That's the feeling that her face is giving off with that comment, but she is truly saying it, but it's okay because you're here. Like typical mean girl shit, it makes me feel gross to watch. Then Kale says, oh well, next year will be more fun. Jesus Christ, girl, you're just making the hole deeper. The scene continues, and then we hear Kale say to Naomi, well, come on, let's go find fireworks. And they walk out of the house to go find wherever their local fireworks are, assumably close to the house. I thought she couldn't go to Megan's party, whoever Megan is, because she didn't have a sitter. But now she can just up and walk out of the house and leave the party where Isaac is asleep upstairs in his room just to go look at fireworks. I mean, I'm thinking that MTV probably made everybody go see fireworks because, hey, we got to have a shot of everyone looking at fireworks for 4th of July. Okay, whatever. So they had to go out. But this continuity just doesn't make any sense. First, she's complaining about not being able to leave because she doesn't have a sitter and also not being wanted at the house because of... But now she has to go and watch fireworks with Naomi, who she doesn't really seem to want to be around anyway. What the fuck is this, MTV? The girls are then shown aimlessly walking around their neighborhood until they randomly find fireworks. Naomi says, hey, look, they're right here. She sounds annoyed, so probably not the best outing, I would imagine. The two watch the fireworks for a few minutes. Kale doesn't say anything. I'm not sure if Naomi does or not, but her voice is embedded in to say, that's amazing. A couple seconds pass, and the scene just sort of ends. And that is it for episode 3 of Teen Mom 2 on About This Time of Day, a Teen Mom podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, and I wholeheartedly apologize for my unexplained absence. I'm sure you were all waiting with bated breath on when the next session was coming out, and I thank you for your patience. Typically when this happens, it's usually depression. That's usually the reason why I can't record, can't edit, can't do anything. So yes, that happened. Also a health scare. Also, I just got a new job, And I'm using my 2 weeks off here between my previous job and my new job to get this session out to you guys. So I cannot guarantee when I will have another session out. I'm not saying this is the end of the podcast, but I am saying I'm a very tired person. I'm very tired. I am going to do my best, my dear listeners, to be there for you in your time of need when you just need a fix for Teen Mom 2 and some pretty sick weed. Please be sure to join us next time, whenever next time may be, for episode 4 of Teen Mom 2, Moving In, Moving On. And by the looks of this thumbnail on this episode, it's going to be fucking awesome, you guys. It's going to be a good one. Until then, you can catch us on Instagram or Twitter at ATTODpodcast on Instagram or Twitter. That's the acronym for the show about this time of day. There you'll find some things like bad art I like to do for every session, updates on when the next session will be posted, and previews on every session's companion strain. So check us out on there if you're bored, or if you're not, you can check us out on there too. It really doesn't matter. So I'll be very honest, it's been difficult to think of a joke to end this session on just due to all the strife and crazy fucking shit going on in the world right now. To my American listeners, I stand with you in strength and solidarity. To my international listeners, please send help. To all the Supreme Court justices of the United States of America listening to this podcast right now, I know I'm sure probably all of them are.
You know how bad you look?